According to St. Mark, Zebedee's sons, James and John, approached Jesus. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to grant our request." "What is it?" he asked. They replied, "See to it that we sit one at your right and the other at your left when you come into your glory." Jesus told them, "You do not know what you are asking. Can you drink the cup I shall drink, or be baptized in the same bath as I?" "We can," they told him. Jesus said in response, "From the cup I drink, you shall drink. The bath I am immersed in, you shall share. But sitting at my right or my left is not mine to give. That is for those for whom it has been reserved." The other 10, on hearing this, became indignant at James and John. Jesus called them together and said to them, "You know how among the Gentiles, those who seem to exercise authority lord it over them. Their great ones make their importance felt. It cannot be like that with you. Anyone among you who aspires to greatness must serve the rest. Whoever wants to rank first among you must serve the needs of all. The Son of Man has not come to be served, but to serve, to give his life in ransom for the many." The Gospel of the Lord. A number of the preachers on television, the televangelists, have a teaching which has been characterized as a theology of prosperity. Something along the lines that if you really follow God, you're going to be blessed in everything. Even financially, you can expect to do well. In fact, some maybe have taken a little further, saying, you know, the more money you send them, the better off you're going to do. There was a joke going around about a couple of the televangelists got together and they were discussing how they were going to divide up the money that they received in the mail. And one of the preachers said, "Well, I have a simple method. I just draw a circle on the floor. And all the money that comes in, I just throw it up in the air. And whatever comes down and lands inside the circle, that's mine. And whatever lands outside the circle, that's God's." And the other evangelist said, that's a good method. I've got one, though, that's a little different. I take all that money that comes in, I throw it up in the air, and whatever God wants, he takes, and whatever comes down is mine. There'll be a second collection today. Now there won't. There is a tendency, though, to draw circles, to put God in certain places. God's in this nice circle. Isn't it nice we can come together in this beautiful church? God's here, obviously. But God's not only here. God's out there, too. There's also, for some people, a tendency to put God just up in heaven. You know, God's there, but we're here. And God's really not that active here in our day-to-day life. He's in eternity. There's another, though, kind of a more subtle boxing of God that it's common even among good people, sometimes especially among good people. It's a sense that God's in the good stuff in life. God's in our happiness, in our joy, in the sunrises, in the warm, good, happy feelings. But God's not in that messy stuff. God's not in the problems. God's certainly not in suffering. But our faith tradition tells us that God is in everything. And if we were really able to hear these readings this morning, we may also hear that not only is God in everything, but God is especially in the messy stuff, in the suffering. In the Hebrew scriptures, the Old Testament, there are two views about the coming Messiah. There was a strong expectation that God would come to set the people free. The majority opinion was that this Messiah was going to be like King David. He was going to bring back the good old days, the days of prosperity, when we were number one. We had all we needed, financially and otherwise. But there is a minority opinion that goes through the Hebrew scriptures, and that's the expectation that the Messiah would not necessarily be a powerful king, but even as expressed by the prophet Isaiah in the reading this morning, that the Messiah would actually be someone who suffers. In the gospel, we can hear both points of view. James and John certainly are of the prosperity version. When you get there on top, I want the seat at the conference table on your left and on your right, and we are going to be prosperous. It's all going to work out so well. But Jesus says, no, the Messiah that I am is the suffering servant, the one who serves and suffers. Sometimes it was a minority opinion of one. Jesus is not against prosperity. Jesus doesn't want us to go without for the sake of going without. If you remember last week's gospel, when the rich young man came to Jesus, Jesus responded to him. He looked on him with love. Jesus isn't opposed to having things, to wealth, prosperity. But Jesus called that rich young man, and Jesus calls each one of us, not to be attached to anything. Wealth, prosperity, good feelings. At the ladies' day of recollection, Father Carr had an interesting quote this past Wednesday. He was quoting a psychologist who said, "You can't have anything until you let go of it." That's Jesus' call to us, to let go. And then when we do let go, we can receive 100 times. James and John agree to Jesus' contract. They agree to drink of the cup that Jesus will drink, though obviously they don't realize what they're agreeing to, the cup of suffering. But let's face it, how many of us really understand what we agree to when we say we will follow the Lord? Obviously, most people baptized as infants have no understanding of what is being agreed to in the baptismal promises. Next Sunday, we'll have many of our young people come forward here with Bishop Dorsey to confirm their baptismal promises in the sacrament of confirmation. They'll have more of an understanding of what they're agreeing to, but it's not finished. As we go through life, we become more and more aware that that nice, cute little white gown that we wore at baptism was really just a preparation for the white gown we'll wear as a pall over our casket at our death. Because all life is that journey of dying to self, of letting go even of our very self, so that we can rise to Christ, the suffering servant. And how for many people it's a lifelong journey, never ended. How many people come here to beautiful sunny Florida, retire here for the good golden years, and realize it's not all glitter. The body wears out, and suffering follows us even to this beautiful climate. Suffering happens. We can't control it. Like the rain that falls on the good and the bad, suffering comes into the life of those who deserve it and those who don't deserve it. Bad things happen to good people. We can't always control that, but we can control how we respond to it. Do we get bitter, blame God when suffering comes? Or does it, like our suffering servant Messiah, teach us to be more loving, more understanding of the suffering of those around us, of the suffering in our world? Yesterday we had a nice celebration here for the feast of St. Luke. St. Luke the physician, the patron of physicians and nurses and healthcare workers. And we invited the healthcare workers from our community who came to the Mass. Father Smith invited them to come up to the altar to receive a blessing. And we laid hands on them and we signed them with the sign of the cross. And I became aware as they were coming up, I had a Band-Aid on my thumb that I was going to do the signing. I was like, oh, should I take this off before I start signing? But then I realized that's a pretty good sign in a way, because none of us are perfect healers. Actually, we heal out of our own woundedness. It's out of the cuts we get in our life that maybe we can become more sensitive to the cuts and the wounds and the pains of others. And we become better healers if we become more aware of our own woundedness. Today, throughout the world, there's a remembrance in our church of the missionaries who've gone out to bring the gospel to the four corners of the world. And one of those missionaries who went out to Hawaii in the last century, a priest from Belgium, is now up for canonization for sainthood. His ministry in the Hawaiian Islands was to go out to the colonies of lepers, those who had leprosy, whom the people didn't want to be near, and they were sent off into their own islands. And he would go out and minister with them and be with these people. And as he would celebrate liturgy with them, one day he got up at the podium and he stunned all the people there, because instead of his usual greeting, he greeted the people as "my fellow lepers." Father Damien himself became afflicted with leprosy. He became one with the people he was serving. In this year, 1997, Pope John Paul has asked us to reflect on the mystery of the second person of the Blessed Trinity in preparation for the coming millennium. As Father Damien stunned the people in his community, if we really think about what our God says to us in Jesus, we should be likewise stunned, because Jesus greets us as "my fellow humans." Our God is one of us, the ultimate wounded healer, the ultimate suffering servant, ultimately one, as the letter to the Hebrew says, one like us in all things but sin. Jesus, like us, was tempted. He was tempted to pass the cup himself. In the agony of the garden, "Father, let this cup pass from me." But he didn't run from suffering. "But not my will, but your will be done." There was the temptation that Jesus must have had not to be the suffering servant, but to be the Messiah of prosperity, rather than to ride a donkey into Jerusalem, to ride the white steed, to be carried in procession to cheers, rather than to carry a cross to jeers. But Jesus did not run from the suffering that's inevitable to any human life. He did not offer easy answers or explain away suffering, but he entered into it. And by entering fully into it, he allows us to enter into his victory over all suffering. God's grace is poured down on us in his Son, Jesus Christ. But unlike the collection from the televangelist, it's a wealth that is lasting unto eternal life. Jesus, like he did with his own apostles, invites us to drink from the cup, but not only the cup of the suffering of his blood, but also the cup of the joy and gladness of the wine transfigured and transformed into his body and blood. As the letter to the Hebrews says, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, So let us confidently approach the throne of grace to receive mercy and favor and to find help in time of need.